Hello, in this podcast we're going to discuss burning things. This is Peter Hill Explains, where during my cardiac rehabilitation walk I just give you a general podcast about things scientific. Now, the reason I want to talk about burning things, I'm going to talk about a match, a strip of magnesium, and the good old sodium, the sodium that you pop in the water, beak of water, and it explodes, definitely explodes. Now, one of the things is that people seem very confident about understanding how things burn, and that confidence can lead to sort of danger or lack of observation. It's a very simple idea. You say fuel plus oxygen, the two get together and produce exhaust, some exhaust products, and some heat and light. Seems a very obvious thing to draw on the blackboard, but drawing the blackboard is quite deceptive. So we're going to start off looking at a match. Now, when you light a match, the powdered glass on the striking surface and the match head, which is phosphorus gum head, strikes, generates a small amount of heat, which ignites the phosphorus. Phosphorus is an oxidant. It's on the same periodic line as oxygen in that level. So it provides oxygen, so the phosphorus actually combusts and burns with the fuel and heats up the match. And this general idea is that oxygen ingresses into the match and the match itself burns. That's a simple idea. But it's actually a little bit more complicated than that. The actual heat of the match head after it's burnt, and you can see it glow quite a lot and produce a little that sound as the match glows. That heat actually causes the wood to heat up and squirt out its oil. So the classic wood for matches is poplar wood. And that's one thing, is that it retains its oil, and when it burns it doesn't smell. So there's two aspects. You don't want a matchstick you pick up and it crumples like a piece of dry wood. And also, when you light the match, you just want to light the match. You don't want to have a smell of the very heavy resins. So there's not very many heavy resins in poplar woods. It's not white wood. Now, the idea is that people think that oxygen actually works its way into the wood and actually burns the carbon. But it's actually, that actually doesn't happen. If that was to happen, the wood would heat up and the wood would glow. But if you actually look at a match, the actual stick as it's burning just turns black. You can actually see it turn black. So it never reaches a very high temperature. And what it does is it squirts out the volatile oil. And that oil forms a shroud of that of the flame, pretty much like a candle, in which the wick doesn't burn, but the oil is drawn through the wick, and a hot part of the wick keeps on burning and keeping the candle light. So really a match is sort of like a portable mini candle, so to speak. Now, eventually, when all the oil has gone, you'll get what is left is the burnt match, and if that continues to burn, that will actually then glow red as it goes hot, and eventually turn into a white dust. The white dust is generally the calcium and other salts which are not burnable, and it's calcium oxide and other oxides. And so that this is a very basic solution, that if you were to test that powder with litmus paper, it would have a very low pH, and that's basically how you produce lime, is you burn wood and the white material left over is lime, generally calcium oxide. So that's a match burning, and that gets us away from the general idea of oxygen going into the wood and the wood burning. It's a little bit more complicated than that. The heat heats up the wood. The wood pushes out oil, and that oil vapor burns, and that produces your wooden match. Now, that's one thing. You may not have known that, or you may not think that's important. But what's important now is we go over to the magnesium rubin, the sort of the next go-to when you're burning things in the lab at school. And you have a strip of magnesium ribbon, and you hold it such that the strip has got the short edge. So there's a it's a ribbon, so it's got a long flat section, and you've got the thickness of it, which I'm calling the short edge. You hold that short edge at an angle into the flame. And the reason for that, this is the Bunsen burner, you hold it at the hottest part of the Bunsen flame. And the reason is that heats up the most. There's an inability for the heat to go away. And so that's when it will ignite. So if you hold it flat in, like a flat ruler into the flame, it won't burn as easily as if you turn it on end with the narrow edge facing up and down. So the flame goes either edge, and you have that very corner where you cut it, that very tip will begin to start to burn. And when it burns, burns very brightly. And I suppose the key thing to note is that it produces a cloud of smoke. Well, it's actually not smoke, it's particulate magnesium oxide. So the magnesium is actually burning. But the fact that it's producing smoke tells us something. And it also, you'll be left with a thin shell of magnesium oxide. So if you imagine the ribbon at the end of it, you'll be left with a very, very thin, easily crushed, with no strength in it, sort of mould of that magnesium ribbon. You'll be left with that. And let's go into that mould. That mould of magnesium ribbon is, in actual fact, oxygen ingressing into the magnesium, forming magnesium oxide and little bits and hanging around around in there. But the actual production of light and the actual production of smoke is very much the heat causing the magnesium to liquefy and turn into a gas. And when this magnesium gas comes off, it then violently reacts with the oxygen. So is that property there? And when it, this gas reacts with the oxygen, it forms little magnesium magnesium oxide molecules, and these clump together into from nanosize to submicron size, wavelength size, in order to scatter the light, so you get this white powder of gas. If it's just purely the magnesium remaining solid, and I'll just close off for a moment, and not jumping out of the magnesium, you'd be just left with no smoke and all the magnesium oxide basically being substituted, slightly thicker, sort of almost like rusting in place. But indeed, that doesn't happen. Now, again, one of the things you have to look with magnesium, magnesium does stay in place and does react with oxygen. Actually, if you leave magnesium out, the oxygen in the air will react and form a fairly tough glassy layer on the outside, and that layer will be see-through. So, and so the initial, and it will cause micro cracks into the magnesium. So the magnesium will have, when you first get it out and polish it out, will have a bright silvery magnetic luster. If you leave it for a while, it will, this magnesium will go dull and grey. And if other, there's other rubbish in the atmosphere, like carbon bits of sulfur from skin and stuff like that, the magnesium surface will actually go quite black. So your surface of magnesium that you have there is quite black, and it's quite a protective coating. And importantly, if you put magnesium in water, this protective coating means that it doesn't react with the water. But if you have fresh magnesium, it does react a little bit with the water, and a little bit of acid sort of breaks the surface off a bit, and it allows the acid in into it. So if you put a bit of acid, just even mild hydrochloric acid, the magnesium will react with it. But in situ, the actual individual molecules magnesium will actually be ripped off the surface and go into solution, so it will dissolve your magnesium. But the important thing is that to form that very thick cloud, magnesium has to actually melt and actually be thrown into the flame. I'm just going up this hill, still rehabilitating up here. So you've got this cloud billowing out of the magnesium. The magnesium is evaporating a little bit, or going as a liquid and mixing with the oxygen at this flame front region. That's in order to produce the observed cloud. A lot of people just say, oh, look, there's a cloud, and don't try and interpret what's going on. Now, all this is very, very important when you're looking at sodium. Now, let's suppose sodium is a metal just next to magnesium. So it goes magnesium, sodium, potassium, calcium. So potassium and calcium, they're further down the periodic table, and they're both a little bit more reactive. So if you put, say, calcium in water, which is similar to magnesium, it will slowly bubble away. You don't need much acid for it to go. So it's a bit more reactive. Sodium, if you had a strip of sodium similar to magnesium, could you light it and would it burn like magnesium? And I think the answer to that is yes. If you've got a strip of sodium, thin strip of sodium, and you heat it in a flame, it should burn exactly like, probably a lot more violently than magnesium. And if when it does so, it will also evaporate and produce a thick cloud, this time of not the inert magnesium oxide, which is fairly inert, probably a bit like ground glass, but sodium oxide, which is a lime. But basically sodium hydroxide, it's a very strong, powerful base. So this smoke will not be a very good smoke. It's a very toxic smoke coming off. So if you have a strip of sodium, now sodium itself, you can't really polish back like magnesium, because as soon as you cut it, and it's a soft metal, you can cut it with easily with a pocket knife. As soon as you cut it, within seconds you can see the surface go from bright silver to slightly greys as the oxides start to form on it. So in general, sodium is stored in an oil or toluene, stored in chunks in there. And so say if you're able to remove the oil and then light it, it would light similar to magnesium. That's an important thing, because that's pretty much what happens when you throw it into water. So people's assumption, particularly from watching Brainiac, where they actually start to throw these substances into water, the general assumption is that the water actually interacts with the sodium and creates hydrogen and the hydrogen burns, which is true. And so hydrogen burning is very easy to spot because it is very much a colourless flame. So one of the first tricks to know that when you're watching sodium burn as opposed to hydrogen burn, sodium is a very bright yellowy flame with lots of smoke coming off, whereas hydrogen has no smoke, it only has water vapour coming off, and it's colourless, it's blue and colourless, similar to the rocket engines of the space shuttle. You see that there's no colour associated with it. So when you put sodium in water, something strange happens. Firstly, it is lighter than water, so it doesn't sink, so it doesn't drop down to the bottom of your beaker and cause an explosion that way. It sits on the surface, a bit similar to lithium, which also sits on the surface. It then reacts a bit. It's a chemical reaction. It creates a bit of heat, and this creates a steam layer, which acts as a bit of a hovercraft for the sodium. So that sodium will jet around the surface of your beaker as the sodium reacts, and as it reacts, a layer of sodium hydroxide will form on the surface. It will produce, some of it will go into solution, but in general it will form a heavy solution, but as it heats, the sodium hydroxide will become so dense you'll actually get a layer of this fairly tough crystal growing on the outside. Now, the interesting thing is there's a lot of heat, and that sodium will become soft, and as you start to spin it around, it will form itself into a ball. And as it does so, little pockets of water in that surface will explode. And so you'll see halfway through, if you're quick enough, a ball which looks like a little moon with little craters in it. Now, what happens next is that the heat becomes so intense, so this is now an insulated ball or ordnance, that it will become so intense with a flame source that the sodium itself will begin to evaporate, turn liquid and evaporate, and you'll get the sodium itself burning directly with air. So sodium in water does not produce smoke, but the sodium that you chuck in a beaker will jet around for a while and then go with a distinctive explosion as the sodium vaporizes, forms a vapor cloud, and that vapor cloud ignites, and this will create a plume of this rather toxic sodium oxide. Now, I suppose the moral of this is that if you don't think it through, don't think, oh, this through, is the match burning? Is the match itself burning, or is the oil burning? Is the magnesium burning in situ, or is it jetting out magnesium gas, so to speak, or gas, and is that gas interacting with the oxygen producing a cloud? Now, it may, so if you don't go through those steps, you can easily fool yourself that the sodium is doing what the teachers tend to write on the board, that sodium plus water gives this, gives you sodium hydroxide and hydrogen gas, and the hydrogen then burns. That's the general gist. But what it is actual fact happening is producing a sodium hydroxide shell casing, and then the sodium itself reacts directly with the oxygen. The sodium turns into a gas, a liquid gas. It heats up sufficient to do that, and then this sudden region of gas which is expanding will produce you yourself an explosion. So you've got, similar to, you can have a gas explosion when gas reaches a critical concentration in air. This will also produce an explosion. That's the sodium gas in air. So the explosion you hear is not your benign thing. It's in actual fact an explosion of sodium in air rather than sodium in water. So this is something you get from actually taking a good hard look at what's going on. And I suppose the moral to this is, and this is obviously this is quite a dangerous thing to do in a classroom. There's some sort of logical gate. So if you've done it in a classroom, you demonstrate it to kids and you're convinced of it, you're going to be very sceptical of someone who comes along and says, well, look at that cloud of gas, that big white cloud. So if you go on the internet and look at sodium being chucked in water, you'll see people lug a whole kilogram of water, of sodium, throw it into a lake. It will sit there for a while and that will produce this huge mushroom cloud of sodium, powder going up into the air. So if you look at that and you ask yourself questions, what's going on, you'll come to a different set of conclusions and take a different view to whether this is a safe classroom activity. I suppose the message I'm giving at this point in time is that although you may not be able to argue, and it's definitely banned in Australia, you're not supposed to be able to do it, but I suppose the point that I'm trying to make is that it's a devilishly hard thing to convince someone who's sort of self-taught them chemistry, or not really self-taught them chemistry. That's would probably be better if they had self-taught them, but they have slavishly listened to explanations from earlier teachers, and the earlier teachers have missed this minor point. They can easily walk themselves off quite confidently into quite a dangerous situation. So my advice is to study sodium and sodium going into water, show pictures of it, but actually doing it, it is equivalent to a toxic ordnance, not a weapon of mass destruction, but it's definitely a chemical warfare style of thing, similar to phosphorus, white phosphorus. It's a very dangerous thing to look at, and good luck to you if you're trying to convince someone who's absolutely sure that this is not the case. So that's all I have to say for this evening. Just to summarise again, I've gone through three versions of burning: a match, magnesium ribbon, and sodium. Basically, they're pretty much the same thing. They heat, they produce a vapour which is burnt. Now in the match, that's very much controlled. In the magnesium, it gives a signature cloud as the magnesium vapour burns into the air. And once you see those two examples, the third example of sodium in water becomes very clear what's going on, or you'll have a heck of a time trying to explain that no, what's written in the textbook is actually happening. So I hope this is valuable to other science teachers who are out there listening to these podcasts in other countries, and I'll try and cover some other interesting chemical reactions for you to look at. Thanks for listening.